Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everybody's having an absolutely blessed day. We have a whole lot of articles here for you. I've been up early, so I've just been looking at a lot of the different news out there, and especially the news and media that does not go out on the mainstream media that they don't want you to know and they don't want you to talk about. And other than that, Dad, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing absolutely wonderful, Austin. It's about 67 degrees here. It's really nice. And I'm having a blast, you know, up here in North Carolina. And so it's just absolutely wonderful. Like I always say, this is the day the Lord hath made, and I will rejoice and I will be glad in it, regardless of how much happy news there is or bad news there is or intermediate news there is. It doesn't make any difference. We've been bought at a price. And we should have righteousness, peace, and joy flowing through us through the Holy Spirit. So, guys, it doesn't matter what your circumstances are today. I'm here to encourage you and to tell you this. God loves you, and so do I. And guys, it's wonderful to know that we're in covenant with the Most High. Austin, what's your first story, bud?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people are starting to kind of realize that the hardcore leftists with these Democrats are truly communist, and a lot of times it's difficult to kind of see that. You hear, we talk about it sometimes, and a lot of times people go, oh, well, I hear this or I hear that. Well, then you have to really start looking at the communist aspects of what they're doing as far as redistributing the wealth, and it's not what they like to make it appear to be, where they're going to redistribute the wealth to everybody else in the United States, and we're all going to live in harmony, and everybody's going to be multimillionaires with free money because they just love redistributing the wealth so much. Perfect example of that is one here now in Rhode Island. Governor Gina Raimondo is now facing harsh criticism and now maybe under investigation after her administration, this is the governor of Rhode Island, awarded a no-bid billion-dollar contract to a gaming company for the lottery in Rhode Island that is represented by the treasurer of the Democratic Governors Association, which the governor chairs. In June, Governor Raimondo and Democratic state legislators announced an exclusive 20-year, $1 billion contract with IGT to operate the state's lottery system. Now, the interesting part about this is that the Democratic Governors Association, which is led by Raimondo, has also contributed almost $100,000 every single year to Raimondo's, as far as administration, since 2014. On Wednesday now, the Rhode Island Republican Party filed a complaint with the State Ethics Commission alleging Raimondo's close ties to the company violating state ethics laws. They said the complaint says the no-bid billion-dollar contract will increase IGT's share of Rhode Island lottery revenues from 1% to 5%, which will equate anywhere from $275 million to $400 million in additional gross revenue to the IGT, which is essentially the state's operating lottery system. So what's ironic about this, and there's a lot of flack, nobody in the mainstream media is really talking about this at all, but even according to Rhode Island law, public officials are prohibited from using their positions to benefit themselves or business associates, and the ethics code requires competitive bidding before the state can award any contracts if a business associate of a public official has a nominal stake in the company being awarded the contract. So this again shows you how they could care less about spreading the wealth, redistributing the wealth, all the little lies they want to talk about, but simply it is to push more money into their own pockets and in their friends' pockets, something that the bankers and the individuals that the bankers control love to do. It's also obvious now in Chicago as they're completely imploding. You guys know last month the city's pension funds are essentially facing bankruptcy and demanded an urgent multi-million dollar bailout from the state. The governor, of course, disagreed and denied the request. Now, just 3 weeks later, Mayor Lightfoot offered Chicago Teachers Union a 14% pay increase, which will cost Chicago taxpayers a whopping $325 million additional and putting even more stress on the city's pension fund. Well, now, what's interesting about Chicago, a lot of people don't understand, as they are one of the highest paid teachers in the entire National Center Teacher Quality aspect. So they get paid higher than almost any other teacher in the entire country. They said a teacher in Chicago that holds a master's degree, average age of 30 years old, with 10 years of experience, makes over $80,000 a year in straight salary. That's not including pensions. They said with the same credentials in New York, average is $70,000. L.A., same credentials, $60,000. Now, what's interesting about this as well is that they're also saying that a teacher in Chicago will receive over $2 million in pension benefits if they work to retirement, far more than the average person in any state dreams of as far as in the school system of accumulating at retirement age. That's because the taxpayers, in fact, since 1981 in Chicago, have massively contributed to the pension fund of the teachers allocation. They said Chicago public school system has paid 7% of the 9% that teachers are supposedly supposed to contribute to their pension fund. So again, we see how the Democratic cities, the ones that are run by the hardcore liberals, all they know how to do is take money from people and redistribute it the way they seem fit. And this is the issues that we also see with a lot of the bankers. I don't have an issue with bankers per se or people that run banks or manage banks or any of that. But what I'm saying is the issue that we have now in this country is we're now allowing central banks and these large too big to fail banks, as we saw back in 2007, completely run the country on the aspect of banks don't produce anything. You have to understand that. They don't manufacture anything. They don't build anything. They don't produce anything. They don't significantly contribute anything to the growth of the population or as far as businesses, inventory, new product development, so forth. None of that's produced. The only thing banks do is take money that they have in circulation or they take on deposit and they loan out to it up to 40 to 1. So $1 million deposit, they can make $40 million in loans off that $1 million in deposit and, of course, charge exceedingly high amounts of interest, or at least were. I mean, now a lot of the mortgages are getting very low. I'll get into that later on in the show. But so what we see now is that the banks have the ability with this, what they refer to as many cases is money magic, to make money out of nothing, not contribute anything, not build anything, not produce anything, but control an entire economy and population based solely off the manipulation of money. And Dad's talked about it in so much in detail, so I'm not going to go into it much further, but that is what we have seen now in so many of these hardcore communist democratic cities, where they don't produce anything. They don't make anything. All they do is continue to tax and tax and tax and tax the citizens of that city or that state and continue to grow the pensions to an outlandish amount, continue to spend taxpayer dollars beyond what anybody can believe. So you see places like LA, you know, where we're talking tens of millions of dollars have constantly taken from the population just in minor taxes. I mean, we see stuff on, you know, tea or soda or all this stuff. I mean, they have 13% top income tax bracket tax in the state. And so many people are starting to leave these states, but you have to understand, this is not because they produce anything. It's because they take money from people that are actually producing stuff. And that's why it's so important that you understand what we're dealing with the banks, and also, too, with these hardcore democratic, just socialist communists that are trying to work their way through the entire system to push that agenda, and that is completely and totally overthrow the United States and the monetary aspect of what the United States was built on. Deb,
well, before they overthrow it, they've got to plunder it. You know,
correct.
The sanctions they do, the taxes they do, the fractional reserve banking that they do. What that does, that extracts wealth from the country and from the taxpayers. I mean, things have gotten so expensive. I mean, you know, we are constantly getting, you know, price increases on raw materials, on supplements. And sometimes we'll go 2-3 years and not do a price increase because we just absorb those because I don't want to pass that on. And you know, and so everything's getting more expensive. You can't go to the grocery store now and buy non-organic groceries for a bag of them. It's going to be $120 if you buy decent stuff. And you're thinking, if you buy organic, it's going to be $200. And you're like, what the heck? You know, how do you end up paying for all of this stuff? And the problem is people don't. They borrow more money. They borrow more money. They become the, and they become the slaves to the lenders, which is what the word says, that the borrower is servant to the lender. And this is what these Sabbatean Kabbalists, Luciferians, Rothschilds have done. Now, I want to say one thing yesterday. The higher elite of the Rothschild banking cartel, these upper boys, they're the ones who run the World Banks and the ones who have the banks, et cetera, and who control things. They're the Luciferians. As far as the lower level of the Rothschild families, I need to make sure I make this clear. You may have a third cousin, you know, ten times removed, his last name is Rothschild or whatever, has nothing to do with any of this stuff, and they're as disgusted with their family as the rest of us. So always remember, when I talk about that, I'm talking about the hierarchy of the banking establishments. There are a lot of good people, like you said earlier, Austin, who are working in banks, who simply don't know any better. I mean, you start talking to bank presidents and branch managers, and you start asking them about fractional reserve banking, and they don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They don't understand it. They're like looking at you like a calf at a new gate. You say, well, don't you understand what fractional reserve banking is? And then all of a sudden you find out that the branch managers are pretty much clueless, but the regional managers and the ones who operate at the higher levels, they understand it. They're the ones that understand it. The local guys don't have any idea. They're just trying to figure out how to loan people money. And the craziest part about this is almost in every case now with all these major banks, especially like with SunTrust, which is now merging, becoming another big Rothschild bank, what ends up happening is the branch managers, in many cases, they can't even give out loans anymore for like $4,000 or $5,000 to a good customer. They don't have the authority anymore. Everything has to go through a centralized hub to maintain control. That way, if they don't like the fact that you're selling guns, they can say, well, we're going to get rid of your merchant account, or we're going to close your account. But yep. before we close your merchant account, we're going to keep your last 6 months of receipts in escrow and seize it. And you think, yep. Well, they wouldn't do that. God, they do it all the time, guys. They seize it. And they say, well, we'll give it back to you in 6 months after we make sure there aren't any chargebacks. And you're like, what the heck? So you lose $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 worth of working capital, and you're like, what the heck? How'd that happen? Guys, I've seen it happen over and over again. And see, that's what these clowns do. It's like I mentioned this the other day, Austin, when we were talking on the show. You know, when you need to borrow money from a bank, God, they want your blood. They want you to basically sign over everything you own. They want to cross-collateralize the doggone loan. If you want to borrow money to build a different house or a vacation home and you've got your other home paid for or whatever, they want you to cross-collateralize and mortgage both properties and have the one place mortgaged. That's what they do. Because they want to basically get rid of as much risk as they possibly can so they can take your stuff as easily as they can. Now, I'm going to put that very clearly. As easily as they can take your stuff, they want your stuff. Because they're not, you know, it's like the banker in Monopoly with a little greedy little hat and a greedy little look, you know. That's how these guys are, most of them. Not all of them. A lot of them are okay. And what they want to do, they want to take everything you've got for the pennies on the dollar and rape you of it. And I'm going to say one thing that's going to make a lot of you mad right now, and I don't mean it to be bad, because there are really good financial planners out there. 10% of financial planners are really good people, and they do a really good job. The other 90% of financial planners are as bad as the bankers. They're going to get paid commissions on what you buy from them. When you buy it, when you sell it, they get paid twice. And it doesn't matter whether you make money, you lose money, or whatever, they get paid. And you think, well, that's awful. Well, yeah. You know, they should be all based upon performance. It's whatever they make for you, they get a percentage of that. If they don't make anything, they lose money out of their own paycheck. Then they'll be different as far as handling your assets and selling and buying and everything else. So yeah. Be very careful with the financial planners you use. I've used good ones. I've used really bad ones in the past. See, guys, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, it's like the entire thing's like a Ponzi scheme. The other day, years ago, I was in Vegas, and I had a friend of mine named Gene Dawes was with me, and we were in the RV, and we were traveling across the United States doing radio, TV, talk shows, and Gene had been kind enough to help me drive to go out there. And I remember we were talking, and we were at Caesar's Palace, and we were at the Venetian and all these huge hotels out there. And I said, Gene, you got to understand something. I said, these hotels haven't been built because people are making a lot of money in Vegas gambling. They're losing a lot of money. And he goes, you're right. And then we went to a wall in one of the hotels, Austin. I think you were with us. And it was a buffet there. And they had a whole wall of people who had won at the casino. And they had won $100. They had won $1,000. They had won $10,000. And there was about, you know, 20 or 30 people in total, about maybe $1 million. And I thought to myself, so there's been $1 million in payouts if people have pictures on the walls. And there's been billions of dollars in profits. Do the math. How much money have people lost? I mean, people don't build things like Caesar's Palace in Vegas and Bellagio. because they're losing money. Okay. And that always bothered me with Trump. He was such a good business guy because, you know, the mafia is neck deep in all the organized crime and gambling and everything else and all these major resorts where gambling is so prolific. And I always wonder, how did Trump basically lose all that money with those casinos? I mean, how did he go bankrupt and all of that stuff? I mean, what was the real deal with all of that stuff? I mean, who was managing that money? Who was managing those accounts? I mean, what the heck? I mean, how do you go bankrupt with a casino when everything's rigged to the house? I don't understand any of that. Okay, so maybe you guys can ask yourself those questions. But the whole thing with Trump is just sketchy. The whole thing's just really, really, really sketchy. Look at Cohen, his old buddy, his old mentor back from the 70s, the openly homosexual, super gay, basically mafioso Masonic Lodge leader's dad was head of the Masonic Lodge of all of the Jewish Masonic Lodge of the entire world. I mean, and this was the Cohen's dad, and Cohen basically is an openly gay, just flagrantly in your face, you know, homosexual, and Trump used to spend hours on the phone with him every day as him being his Trump's mentor. I mean, the whole thing's messed up, guys. I mean, we know the Masonic Lodge is all involved. We know that, you know, the rumors are, I can't prove it, but the rumors are that Trump basically is a Masonic Lodge person. He's a high degree level Mason, which whether that's true or not, I have no idea. I would assume it is because of the Presbyterian church that he's in out of Scotland. It's got a high level, a lot of Masonic leaders in it. And the Masonic Lodges, remember, guys, for hundreds of years, these guys control the planet. These are the guys that put together the United States of America. Never forget that. I mean, George Washington showed up with the Capitol building in full Masonic garb for the laying of the cornerstone. I mean, the whole Washington Monument is basically a phallic symbol. You know, it's a Masonic thing that they do together. You know, you guys, if you don't know what phallic symbol is, I got kids listening, you guys look it up. I mean, all of these things are going on as we speak underneath the covers. And a lot of that leadership was turned over to the CFR. A lot of that leadership was turned over to the United Nations. A lot of that leadership was turned over to the international banking cartels. But a lot of it's still running through the high-level Masonic Lodge folks. And Cohen's family was deeply involved with the Masonic Lodges. Remember, these are the guys that were absolutely bent on rebuilding the temple all the way back in 1820. These are the guys that were really pushing for the rebuilding of Israel and Palestine. You know, this is the group that does that. And we need to understand that this is who we have running the planet. These Luciferians. And you think, well, I know people that are in the Masonic Lodges. They're not Luciferians. Well, I'm not saying they all are. A lot of them don't know what they're involved in. They don't understand anything. But I'm going to say something to you. Back in the seventh grade, I had a friend of mine. His name was Albert Grulich. He's dead now. May he rest in peace. And he told me, he says, I want to invite you to a Demolé meeting. And I said, okay. I was like 11, 12 years old, whatever. And I said, oh, I didn't know what that was. It was, you know, it's like the children's version of the Masonic Lodges. And I remember I went to this, quote, temple there in Auburndale where I was raised. And he basically, and I was watching all this stuff, and they're talking about Lord this, Lord that, Lord this, Lord that. They're talking to their Lord all the time, their God. And they never mentioned Jesus. They never said Jesus one time. They never said Son of God. They never said Jesus one time. Yeshua, nothing, not Christ, nothing. Just Lord this, Lord that. So, and it was spooky to me as a kid. I thought to myself, this is weird. These guys running around in these robes. You know, this is some weird stuff. Because, you know, I was going to church every Sunday. It was a Lutheran church, but I was still there every Sunday. And I'm thinking to myself, this is weird. So finally, the next day, Al Grulich said, let me talk to you after class. And I said, all right. So I'm sitting in class talking to him. And he was a great guy. He was actually in the Normandy invasion in D-Day and had been injured from it psychologically. He got suffered from post-traumatic stress syndrome. And I can see why I probably would have that, too, if I'd been on the Normandy beaches. And what was interesting about all of this stuff is, he asked me, he said, what do you think about the Masonic Lodges? And I said, Mr. Grulich, I said, I'm just curious. And I said, they're talking about the Lord. What Lord are they talking about? You know, my Lord is Jesus Christ. I said, what is that? What, I mean, what Lord are they talking about? Who are they talking to? I mean, what is this stuff? And because I was still young. And that was it. I was never invited back because I was already pushing against that whole thing. I saw him years later. And, you know, many, many years later. Gosh, it's probably been 10 years ago now, which is, what, 50 years later and 40 years later. And he said to me, I asked him, I said, are you still involved in that Masonic stuff? And he goes, no, man, I haven't done it in many years. And I said, all right, good. He died a few years ago. He's a great, great guy. I really liked him. But the whole thing about it is that we need to understand that, you know, just because a person's in these things doesn't mean they're a Satanist. But they really need to find out what they're involved in before they get involved in it. They really need to do the research to find out what Masonic Lodges are all about. And I can understand, Austin, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, you know, the Masons are a group of business guys that get together and they help each other in business and they promote each other, that kind of stuff. Okay. That's how it was pushed to me, that they'll help you in business, that kind of stuff, from Mr. Gruelich. He didn't understand. I guarantee you, he didn't understand the intricacies of the Masonic lodges and what you learn and what you become in the 33 degree level and all the other things. And they finally tell you that their light bearer is Lucifer. They finally say, Albert Pike wrote this stuff in The Morals and Dogma. You guys need to read that section on this, on who Lucifer was, the seething energies of Lucifer. This whole thing is important that everybody understands what the Masonic lodges stand for. Again, 50 years ago, before we had the internet, they could obfuscate what they were. They could pretend like they weren't what they are at the high levels and not tell their initiates what they were. They can't do that anymore. And you can't allow them to do that to you anymore. You need to do the research if you're looking at these weird things. Don't get involved in these secret societies. Just stay away from them. It's not worth it. Just stay away from it. Just serve God and obey His commandments. That's the sole duty of man, guys. That's what it says in the book of Ecclesiastes. And we need to understand that because, guys, we're only here for a very, very short time. Mr. Gruelich, he's gone now. May he rest in peace. Wonderful man. I really, 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 really admire him, and I really, really respected him. You know, the same thing I've lost. I've had so many other friends. You guys are going to see. You hear me talking like this. You don't hear me talk like this very often. But listen to me for a second, young people. Yesterday, in my mind, because time is linear, okay? Yesterday in your mind is equivalent to 20 years ago in your mind. There's no gap, all right? You know, 40 years ago, I'm in graduate school at Florida State University. I'm in graduate school 40 years ago at Florida State. And I'm like, okay, this is where I am. And all of a sudden, I wake up, and now I'm 63 years old, and I'm like doing a national talk show with millions of listeners and basically, you know, really trying to tell people the truth. And it went by like that. I mean, I could snap my fingers, and it went by that fast. So, guys, listen to me. This journey that we're on is always going to another destination because we have another day as long as we're here. Enjoy the journey. Don't get all caught up and got to do it now. You got to set goals. You have to have dreams. You got to do all that. I agree with all that. But you got to let go and you got to let God. You got to try to stop force things because God's going to set stuff up for you. I can tell you story after story after story of how God has just absolutely just supplied all of my needs through His glory, through His righteousness, through Christ. And guys, it's so important that you just understand that this is not a practice session that you're in. This is your life on this planet as we know it, as far as reality is concerned. But here's the thing, guys. You know, we're not going to be here forever. We're only going to be here for a very, very short period of time. So all of these clowns that are running this planet right now, these weirdo groups, we don't have to deal with them anymore after we're gone. And they have to deal with their own selves and their own leadership for eternity. In other words, they're going to be tormented in hell. Now, here's the interesting thing about hell, okay? This is the reason we're having the transhumanism movement, okay? This is why they're doing this. They don't want to die. They want to have soul transfers. They want to be able to take a vessel from another human being, basically vacate the soul. This is going to get weird now. This is some crazy stuff. And they want to transfer their soul, their essence, their being, their mind, their thoughts, their background, their past, everything into another body so they don't have to deal with what they've done. In other words, they don't want to go to hell. They don't trust Lucifer any more than we do. I can't believe they're going to trust a liar and a thief like that guy. And so they know that this guy is not going to do what he says he's going to do. That's why it says in the book of Isaiah, they're in all, I think it's chapter 14 or 15, these guys are all sitting in hell. They're all in chains, leaders of the world. And all of a sudden, Lucifer shows up, and he's in chains. And they're like, what the heck, man? This was supposed to happen to us. What the heck, man? You told us this wasn't going to happen. Well, it is going to happen, and they know it's going to happen. Because remember, these guys are jealous of you because you're created in God's image. And they want to be you because they don't have souls. That's the one thing these interdimensionals are so fascinated with is the human soul because they haven't been able to duplicate that because God did that because we're created in His image. And so it's one of these things they're really, really working on is the soul transference and all this other weird stuff that I've never talked about on the show because they don't want to die. That's what transhumanism is all about, to transfer their energy, their entity, their essence, their mind, their thoughts, their soul, their being into a computer interface through an android linked through a 5G network into Lucifer's hub so they don't ever have to die. Because this is the next lie he's told them, that you won't die. It's just another lie. They may be able to transfer their memories because those are thoughts into another machine, but their soul's going to be, you know, in trouble for all eternity, and they need to realize that. And guys, that's why it's so important to do what's right in God's eyes. That's why it's so important to try to bring honor and glory to Jesus Christ and God with all of your heart and all of your soul and all of your mind. Now listen to me. We're all going to mess up. We're all going to do things we shouldn't ought to do. We're all going to say things we shouldn't ought to say. I mean, I'm the first person to say that. I mean, I'm not going to, I have no halo to adjust. You know, listen to me, but we're under grace. God's grace is sufficient for you. You got to realize that we can do all things through Christ, that he was so good to us that he did what he did because of grace. It's unmerited favor. We don't deserve to be in God's presence for all eternity. Now, last Thursday we did a show. You guys need to listen to it if you haven't heard another show this week. In fact, I listened to the show personally yesterday. I want to hear what they say, because sometimes I get under the anointing when I'm talking and I say things. I'm not even realizing I'm saying these things, and I have to go back and listen to what I said. Now, that sounds kind of weird to you guys if you're not a Christian, but you'll get it when you understand what the leading of the Holy Spirit means. And I listened to my show from last Thursday, and I thought, wow, that was a really good show. And I had a friend of mine from college. She sent me a text and said, wow, that really meant a lot. She goes, I've heard thousands of preachers and thousands of sermons talk about Christ and talk about Christianity. And it wasn't thousands of preachers, it was thousands of sermons. Talk about Christ and Christianity. She goes, you galvanize that. You made me understand there's so much more. And guys, that's what I always tell you guys as a Christian. There's so much more. Guys, if we understood who and what we are in Christ, we would change the world. We could literally change the world today. I mean, the frequency would change. It would just everything, the whole planet would change through the power of the Lamb, through the blood of the Lamb. But because we've been compromised in our churches, compromised in our pulpits, compromised from all of these different things that were so powerful in the first century when the Holy Spirit fell in the book of Acts, I mean, in Jerusalem. I mean, we've been compromised. Now, here's the exact quote. It says, can't express how your conviction and knowledge of Jesus deeply affects me. I've heard thousands of messages about God's love, but nothing with science to back it up like you expound on. I'm sure that you've led many to accept Jesus Christ as Lord. Guys, I don't know if I've had a lot of people get saved. I've had a lot of people talk to me and send me emails. They got saved on the show, and we do the sinner's prayer, and we pray, and we explain to you what Christianity all it really is. But guys, listen to me. We're only here for a little short period of time. You know, I know that physically, you know, I'm never going to be as strong as I was when I was 18, 19, 20 years old. And it ain't going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I was pretty doggone strong. But it doesn't make any difference, guys. It's the spiritual growth we have to have. It's the love and the relationship with Jesus Christ that has to grow. That's what needs to grow. Now, we need to stay in shape, and we need to eat right. We need to take our supplements. We need to do all that stuff so this physical body maintains itself as long as we can. But for what reason? So that we can be about our Father's work, so we can be about taking care of our families, so we can be about setting goals and making things happen in our lives and changing the world. That's what we're supposed to do. Guys, I love you. I appreciate you, too. Awesome. What's your next story?
Oh, no doubt about it. Absolutely. Also, too, in other news here, this is something that was interesting. Is I've been constantly kind of, you know, looking at the research on, you guys know I'm very picky about my food and what I eat. I try to eat very clean, as Dad does as well. And, you know, I always try to have an impact, a positive impact on people around me with the food that I'm eating. Also, you know, when you go out and you're eating with somebody or you go to dinner with a bunch of people, you know, especially in my line of work, people watch what you eat. They do. They look at what you eat. They see what you're going to eat. They see what you're going to drink. They see how you're going to, you know, what you're going to order. And this is interesting now because this is a new research study from JAMA Pediatrics showing that obesity can spread through communities like a social contagion. Now, before everybody jumps all on me and says it has any effect on that, listen to the research study here, because I've warned people about this for years. What your family eats, what your friends eat, who you go out to dinner with on a regular basis, what they eat, in most cases, not all the cases, but in a lot of times, they are going to impact you in the same aspect of bad company corrupts good character. And I'm not saying because somebody eats a lot of junk food or they're obese, they're a bad person. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is a lot of times it can have a negative impact on you, on how you eat and how you live, if you hang out with people that have a very, very poor dietary lifestyle. And this article here, it shows that moving to an area with a high rate of obesity can massively increase your risk of becoming obese yourself, and also adopt adopting unhealthy habits and behaviors of people around you subconsciously. In this study, researchers of University of Southern California looked at whether exposure to communities with high rates of obesity increased the risk of obesity in those residents. They recruited families of U.S. Army personnel at 38 military bases all across the United States. A total of 1,314 parents and 1,111 children participated, whose rates of obesity reflected the national rates. One in three adults, a typical U.S. county, is obese, and some of the bases were in counties with high rates of obesity ranging from 21 to 38%. So they had a broad spectrum here of what they tried to correlate. The researchers found that residents assigned to bases in counties with a high rate of obesity were more likely to become overweight or obese. For every single percentage point increase in obesity rate of locals, the odds that a teenager would be overweight or obese increased by 6%. Listen to that. Every single percentage point increase in the obesity rate of the local community increased the odds that the teenager would become overweight or obese by 6%. The chances that the parent would become obese increased by 5%. It goes on that a leading doctor explained, Dr. Ashton Doctor said, social contagion in obesity means that if more people around you are obese, there's a much higher probability you're going to become obese yourself. And this is why I tell so many people, you need to make sure you're hanging around people that are eating clean and eating healthy, especially if you have a problem with that. Myself, I'm not really, I don't fall much into that category. If I'm around people that are still eating garbage, I'm generally still going to eat the same Tupperware food that I eat on a regular basis just because that's how I am. But for the mass majority of people, if you start becoming around people that are eating junk food all the time and want to eat blooming onions when you go out to dinner and want to get, you know, triple cheese fried Oreos for dessert and want to eat soda every time you go out, high probability if you hang out with them after a while, you're going to start falling into that category. So just something I wanted to kind of put out there because I've had a lot of people argue with me on that. Also how they say obesity is genetics. You know, oh, my family's obese, so I'm obese. No, the genetics has nothing to do with that in most cases. Now, we have seen some epigenetic changes with the GMO foods that can cause in your body. But in most cases, if your family eats junk food all the time and they drink soda all the time and they bring cake home all the time and they make cookies all the time and they have four or five tubs of ice cream in the freezer all the time, it's a high probability you're going to eat the same thing, which means you're going to end up being the same body fat percentage that they are. So understand that in most cases, it's not a genetic aspect of that. So you have to understand, if you want to get back in better shape, if you want to be healthier, if you want to have better cardiovascular health, if you want to look better, if you want to have more energy and more mental acuity, you have to make the changes. You cannot rely on other people around you to make the changes, because in most cases, if you do that, you will fall prey into those food dietary habits if the people around you are not eating a healthy lifestyle. Dad, but I thought that research article was really interesting because I've had so many people argue with me on that. And of course, you see the same thing a lot of times when people get married. I've seen this a lot as well. You know, you'll have somebody where the guy will be in like really good shape, and maybe the wife that he's marrying is not in bad shape, but you know, her family eats junk food and she loses weight for the wedding and she looks good in the dress and so forth. And then you'll see him 2 or 3 years later and both of them are, you know, 50, 60, 80, 100 pounds overweight, obese. And you're like, golly, what happened? You know, he used to lift all the time in college. He was in great shape. Now, you know, he's 350 pounds, doesn't even work out anymore, you know, out of breath, walking up a flight of stairs. And what happened? You start eating how people eat around you in most cases, especially when it comes to spouses. That's why it's so crucial. If you're getting married, if you're dating somebody, especially if you're concerned about your health and you want to stay in good shape and you want to eat clean, you have to make sure your wife is the same way. And if she's not the same way, she's extremely coachable. You know, a lot of times you meet people and, you know, they may not know anything about it. It's not that they don't want to eat clean. They just simply don't know anything about it because they've never been taught. And if you start teaching them, hey, you know, you really don't want to eat MSG or high fructose corn syrup or aspartame. You want to stay away from all these trans fats, the hydrogenated oil and canola oil. And they go, oh man, I didn't know that did that. That's really interesting. Yeah, I don't want to eat that. That's horrible. That sounds horrible for you. Let's try this, what you're doing. That's great. That's fantastic. But if you go, hey, babe, I really don't want to be eating a bunch of ice cream and especially high fructose corn syrup or Kool-Aid with Red 40. And they go, I've eaten that my whole life. I'm not going to change that. You can't tell me what to do. Whoa. If you're interested in health and you're interested in being fit the rest of your life, you really need to question how that relationship is going to work out. And I'm not trying to step on any toes. I have just now seen a lot of marriages fail and a lot of marriages stay together. As I'm in my 30s now, I've been through a lot of it over the last 9, 10 years. A lot of friends of mine that have come and gone, and wives and husbands and marriages that have come and gone, and a lot of it isn't always on food, but a lot of it comes down to basic aspects of things that they didn't think were going to be an issue when they got married because they thought the other person would change or the other person wasn't going to keep doing so. And of course, as we know now, when you get married, you can't expect anybody to change. It's pretty much the way they are, and that's the way it needs to be, because if somebody's changing to make you happy so you can get married to them, the high probability those changes are not going to stick after you're married, and the same goes with dietary habits and lifestyle in that aspect. So I just want to kind of bring that up today, Deb.
You know, it's interesting. I know a guy in Tallahassee who got married to a girl, and she was having some really bad health problems. I mean, bad health problems. I mean, she was constipated. She had headaches. I mean, just menstrual cramps beyond belief, you know, once a month. And he finally ended up, the marriage started getting on the rocks because this girl wouldn't eat right. She wouldn't take supplements. She wouldn't do anything. And the guy was in the supplement business. And, you know, he had married her. He'd met her in church. She was beautiful. She looked like Natalie Wood, you know. So he basically thought that, you know, she was going to be it. He was 25 years old and he was ready to get married. And let me explain something to you guys. Men get married when they're ready to get married. And if you don't believe that, look at all these girls who date these guys for 4 and 5 years. They don't get married because the guy's not ready to get married. Then they break up, and 2 years later, the guy's married to somebody else. You're like, what the heck? Well, he was ready to get married 2 years later. Not to say he'd been ready to get married with you 2 years later, but that's what he did. So this is what guys do. When they get ready to get married, they get married. So this guy met this girl in church, thought, okay, this is great. He was a recent convert to Christianity, and basically thought he was going to live happily ever after. And then he finds out that, number one, she's a swine in the home. She won't clean anything. I mean, dishes are stacked 2 feet deep in the sink every time he comes home and from work, and the laundry's not done, and she's got a cat that's got fleas, and there's fleas in the house. You guys are laughing now. This is a true story. And finally, you know, she finds out she never wants to have sex because she's sick all the time, headaches all the time, and it's like, what the heck did I get myself into? And finally, they went to a counselor. And the counselor said to this lady, you know, is it true that if you take your supplements that your husband gives you and you eat clean and you take a protein powder every day that you don't have headaches and you feel great? And she goes, yeah, it's true. She's talking to a PhD psychologist, and the husband's in the room. And he goes, well, do you do that? And she goes, well, no. And he goes, well, why not? She goes, because I don't want to. And he goes, well, do you think that's fair to your husband? She goes, I don't care. You guys are laughing now. But guys, it's the truth. And Austin's right. You know, that when I got divorced the first time, I don't go into detail on all that from a personal standpoint, but when I got divorced for various reasons in Tallahassee back in 1983-84, and I started dating, first thing I did is I prayed, and I asked God exactly what I wanted. Now, you guys, I've never talked about this on the air, but I asked God, I told God the physical characteristics that I wanted in a wife. I also said I wanted her to love him with all of her heart, but I also said I want her to be in the health and nutrition, and you know, in the fitness. I prayed this stuff. I actually got on my knees and I prayed this stuff. As God is my witness, you guys know I tell you the truth all the time. That's what I did, and that's exactly what I got with Sharon. Now you think, well, I prayed and I didn't get that. Well, I'm not saying that, you know, that's going to work for everybody who prays those things, but it worked for me. But it's the thing, guys. Here's the thing. I had already been through enough after being married for 3 years that I knew what I didn't want. See, sometimes it's as important to know what you don't want as what you do want. Now, guys that have been divorced, you're like, yeah. I remember one time I knew this lady. Her name was Bonnie, and she married this guy. And, oh, my gosh, she was older than him. She's kind of like a cougar. And she carved BITC, you know, in his hood of his car with a screwdriver. She didn't key it. She screwdrivered it with a flathead screwdriver. I mean, this marriage was awful. Now, whether they're still together or not, I have no idea. But if I'd been this guy, I'd have pulled the plug on that weirdo long ago. But, guys, you don't know what you're getting. Look at that movie with Glenn Close and, you know, Michael Douglas, you know, whatever that thing was called. I forgot what it was, the Fatal Attraction. You know, there are people out there, both men and women, that are as whacked out as that female character was. And so you got to be careful who you marry. And you got to, and Austin's 100% right again. You don't change people. You know, if you change to get married and you go back, is that really fair to your spouse? Was that really fair that you did that to them? Is it really fair that you dragged them into that ditch with you? Because if you don't want to change something, I mean, like for instance, if you're eating clean because you're dating somebody and all of a sudden you get married, now all of a sudden you start eating Twinkies and ding-dongs and cupcakes again and you gain 200 pounds, what the heck? Do you think that was right? Now because you got a ring on your finger and you got a piece of paper that says you're married, now you have the right to do whatever you want to do and treat him however you want to treat him and not have sex and eat like horrible and gain 200 or 300 pounds or 400 pounds or 500 pounds or 600 pounds. And guys, it goes your way too. Do you have that right to do that to your wife? I mean, we all have to work together. You think, well, this is some really hard teaching. I didn't say it wasn't a hard teaching. This is the kind of stuff that empties out churches. This is the stuff that they don't
preach. That's
true. Why? No, it is. They don't want to talk about this stuff because it's so important. The other day, Alexis was dating some guy. I mentioned this to you last week. And I said, are you guys going to church together? She goes, well, no, it's my 18-year-old. I said, 18-year-old. She goes, he's been injured in churches and blah, blah, blah. And he doesn't like churches and blah, blah, blah. I said, do you really want that relationship? Are you going to be going to church if you get married with your children by yourself? Is your husband going to be there? I said, if you marry this guy, I mean, think through what you're doing right now. She goes, you know, Dad, you're right. And guys, it's not that hard. You find somebody who loves Christ. You find somebody who basically wants to have a proper role model as far as their life. You have somebody, find somebody who basically wants to just be healthy. We're not trying to cross off 1,000 questions here. And so it's just, you got to find the right person and you got to make sure they were raised right. Now, also, I'm going to say one more thing. This makes it a little bit more difficult. You got to understand what Austin said about if you show them something, whether it's a husband or a wife, that something's bad, they have to be coachable. In other words, if you say, honey, before we get married, before I say I do, before we tie the knot, we got to talk about vaccines and we got to talk about, things like autism and what they do to marriages and families. And we've got to look at the research on this and we've got to make a decision before we say I do, is will we vaccinate our children? There you go. Now I'm really meddling. Because guys, I have seen so many relationships go sideways because of this one issue. When one person wakes up and goes, oh my gosh, this is awful. So be willing to talk about these types of issues to start with. The stuff with the cap on the toothpaste and who does the dishes, whatever. You guys work that out. That's not a big deal. It's the primary fundamental beliefs that people have that really changes marriages for the better or for the worse. How are you going to discipline your children? Do you believe in popping them on the butt if they don't listen? Do you believe in taking them to church and Sunday school? Do you believe in first-time obedience? I mean, these are the things that if you don't work through this stuff before you get married and you don't talk through this stuff, these things can turn into a major, major hindrance for you down the road. I'm talking divorce-type hindrance. I'm talking it'll really, really mess with your head and mess with your marriage. Somebody likes to go out and smoke a little bit of dope every once in a while, and you go, well, I don't want to do that. Well, I like to smoke dope. No, I don't think that's okay. Well, I'm not going to date you anymore. Well, that's all right. Whatever. Okay. I like to go out and dance with my old boyfriends in bars if you don't want to go out on Friday night and I'm dating you. No, that's not okay. And, I had a guy come by a few years ago. I told you this story. I'm going to tell it to you one more time. And he was dating this girl and she liked to go out and dance on the weekends. He didn't like to dance. So she'd go out every Friday or Saturday night and go out with her girlfriends and dance with a bunch of men. And in bars. I mean, I'm talking like, full-blown, like bars. And she thought it was okay, and she claimed to be a Christian. And I asked her, I said, well, why do you think this is okay? And she goes, well, he can't tell me what I can do. I'm going to dance with my friends if I want to dance with my friends. I said, what if you guys get married? She goes, it doesn't make any difference. I'll have girls' night out. I said, you'll have girls' night out in a bar dance with other guys? She goes, yeah, it won't make any difference. You can't tell me what to do. So I asked her, I said, how many guys have you slept with? Uh-oh, I should have said that. And she goes, oh, I don't know, about 50. I went, whoa, there you go. And so I said, okay, there you go. And I'm not saying that you can't repent from sleeping with 50 people or 50 women or 50 guys. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you're still involved in that lifestyle and you're trying to get serious with one individual, there's a high probability you're not going to remain monogamous. I'm just telling you that. If you're still going out and doing what you did before you got married with your girlfriends and boyfriends and guy friends or whatever you want to call it. So be very, very careful when you choose a spouse and make sure that they agree with you, at least in the basic fundamentals. Now I want to talk about a compound, chlorpyrifos. This is an insecticide that when they put this stuff down, they've got to use hoods, masks, ventilators, and they've got to cover their entire body with plastic. This has been used on so many different compounds. And I'm going to read you a little bit about this. It says, this drug, the chlorpyrifos, described as some of the most dangerous pesticide you never heard of, is an insect-killing organophosphate. Now, I'm going to stop for 1 second. It has chloride in it, chlorine. That's what it is. Okay, it's a chlorocarbon. Guys, Splenda, the artificial sweetener, is a chlorocarbon. It's an organophosphate. They trace the roots back to the Nazi-era Ig Farben nerve gases, Contemporary scientists still describe the compounds as junior strength nerve agents that have mechanism action comparable to sarin nerve gas, which is a fluorine compound. Dow Chemical, the company that helped bring the world mustard gas during World War I, and napalm and Agent Orange during the Vietnam War, is the manufacturer of this insecticide. In the U.S., the agricultural industry applies millions of pounds of this product to at least 50 major food crops. Farms around the world also use the chemical heavily and ubiquitously. Chlorpyrifos is sprayed on corn, soy, that's apples. That's why I won't buy anything that's an apple or an orange that's not organic. Strawberries, which absorb it, by the way, and nuts. Research have linked both prenatal and postnatal exposure to brain damage, even the lowest detectable dosages. They note that exposure is not limited to agricultural environments, as organophosphates are ubiquitous in the food, dust, and air, although adults and children who eat an organic diet display significantly reduced levels. Flagging exposure to chlorpyrifos and other organophosphates as a risk factor for autism, spectrum disorders, and other developmental problems, including higher cognitive deficits, attention deficit disorder, lower IQ scores, and impaired working memory. Concerned scientists have been sounding the alarm for quite some time, yet despite the substantial body of evidence documenting adverse effects not just on human health but also on wildlife and the environment, the Environmental Protection Agency proclaimed on July the 18th that it will take no action other than continue to review the safety of this incredibly toxic compound. Guys, this is the same group that basically likes to take away all of our stuff that we like to do, along with the FDA, and allow us to have products like this on the market that are unbelievably dangerous and poisonous. So, guys, I don't know how to say this to you. The other day, we went to an apple place up here, and the first thing I asked them, I said, that's a big apple place. I said, do you guys use organic apples? Do you use organic apple cider? No. The whole list was no all the way down. I said, okay, I'm done. And then I went over to their pastry section to see what they cooked with, and hydrogenated oils, trans fats, soybean oil, and almost every single pastry was deep fat fried in some mystery oil. They didn't even know what they were frying it in. And I thought myself, this place is just all about the masses and eating junk food. Now, guys, think about it for a second. This is why the U.S. is leading the world when it comes to heart disease, to diabetes, and cancer. This is why the leading cause of death in children of the ages 14 and under, other than accidents, is cancer and leukemia is so high, because these kids are being fed this junk. Yesterday, I'm going to say something on the show real quick that I wasn't going to talk about. I'm going to do it anyhow. Yesterday, I met a young man who was doing some work for me up here, and I asked him if he was a Christian. He's got five children. Great guy. Very smart. And I used to be, but I left the church. He says, I'm on the outs with God right now. And he goes, my brother died of leukemia, and we prayed for him, and he was not healed. And so I blame God for that. And so I'm no longer a Christian. I no longer accept God or Jesus. And I said to him, I said, you know, that's some pretty dangerous stuff you're talking about. I said, now let's talk about this for just a second. Now, some of you may have some friends that are in the same boat, and then you listen to the show. They pray for somebody, a loved one, who ends up dying anyhow, and they think, well, God let me down. God allowed this person to die. Let me explain to you something about the Rothschild-Rockefeller medical industrial complex. This is a Luciferian group of people that basically want to have people suffer and die so they can extract as much money and wealth from them as they possibly can. Here's the problem. Because God's a gentleman, he basically doesn't go where he's not wanted. Now, I'm going to get really, really weird here for a second. You guys got to stay with me. Let me finish it first before you say, what's going on with Ted today? If you give yourself over to the Rockefeller-Rothschild medical complex, okay, and you're praying God for a healing, and I'm not saying that sometimes medicine is not important, all right? I'm not saying that. But according to multiple research studies that were done at the Gerson Cancer Therapy Clinic back 100 years ago, the primary cause of leukemia is a vitamin C deficiency. And a lot of you don't know that because I don't talk much about cancer. And basically, it's a subclinical diagnosis of scurvy. And that's what causes leukemia, in their opinion. Or was it their opinion 100 years ago? I don't know if it still is. I'm just going to just qualify. I'm being very careful what I say. But don't blame God if someone doesn't get healed because they've had chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, and they've poisoned their bodies because of the Rockefeller Medical Industrial Rothschild Complex. Because when you give permission to these guys to do this stuff to you, you're saying to God, basically, okay, look, here's the deal. I believe these guys are going to do what they need to do correctly. Now, I'm not saying that sometimes medical intervention is not important, because sometimes it is. But always remember that. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't do medical intervention. I'm just saying, don't blame God if it goes sideways, because you don't know who you're involved in, what they're doing, and what their alternative motives are. There are people out there that actually, they're medical professionals who basically masquerade as medical professionals. They may be licensed, but they don't really care about helping people. And you got to realize, when you get involved with these people, they can do all kinds of crazy stuff to you. I mean, there's a movie out that came out. I saw it one time on TV. I never saw it again. It was shut down pretty doggone quick. It's called The House of God. And it talks about the bad medical people out there who actually enjoy killing people and providing eugenic services, that kind of stuff. And so you need to understand that when you get involved in Satan's realm, that you're given the authority and the power and the relationship and the distrust to another group of people other than just God himself. But again, I'm saying this. Medicine sometimes can be very, very important. When Austin had that pericarditis 3-4 years ago now, you know, we had the emergency room in there. They knew exactly what to do to correct his condition so he wouldn't die. So it was one of those things, but we knew what we were getting involved in. So be very, very careful when you choose the medical model. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm being very careful about what I'm saying today, because sometimes it's the best alternative. But look at your options. Just because one person says something to you, just because one person decides they want you to do this, get multiple opinions, especially when it comes to cancer treatment, bypass surgery, and all these different types of things. Get multiple treatment options. Get multiple opinions from multiple professionals. You know, some guys may want to do surgery on you because they got to make, you know, 3 house payments, and they got 4 ex-wives they're paying alimony to, and they can't make the payments. So they got to get somebody else in there on the table to cut. And a lot of doctors have been found to basically be guilty of people being diagnosed with cancer, having cancer surgery done with no cancer, or heart disease with no bypass problems. Guys, I'm not making this stuff up. Be very careful who you trust and who you talk to, and get multiple opinions from these different guys. Years ago, I was going to get my shoulder operated on by a man over in Tampa because I had a bone spur in it. And he told me, he says, look, he says, your bone spur is getting better because I was taking the magnesium product. And he goes, you know, I don't want to do surgery on it. And I said, what do you mean you don't want to do surgery? He goes, buddy, he says, yeah, it's 50-50. It may get better, it may get worse. He goes, I'm busy. I don't need to do surgery on you just to do surgery on you. He says, I suggest you leave it like it is. He says, if it's working and you're not in pain, he goes, leave it be. That's the doctor you want. Are you guys listening to me? That's who you want. You don't want the guy who says to you, oh, by the way, no matter what you're going to do today, we're going to have surgery on you. What the heck? Let everything stable. Get everything calmed back down. Let me make a rational decision. Let me talk to my family. Let me talk to my wife. Let me make some choices here. Don't be telling me if I don't have this surgery done in the next 3 minutes, I'm going to die. Don't be telling me stuff like that. I mean, I walked in here. I think I can walk out. Guys, I had an aunt. I was told, you have to have bypass surgery. She's 85 years old, right? It's 85, 82, 85. Her name's Audrey. Wonderful lady. Mentally acute. Can walk 2-3 miles. Doctor said, you're going to have bypass surgery. I said, don't do this, Audrey. Don't do this. Now you're 82, 84, 85 years old. So what are they going to do? Tell you you're going to live longer? I said, well, they're going to go in there and check my heart. They say I may have a bad valve. So now they're going to do bypass surgery. And they're going to change out a valve? I said, this is a real high probability. You can't recover from the surgery. And she did. And then she died. And I did the eulogy at her funeral. And it was awful. And one of her daughters was in the medical profession. She said, I begged my mom not to do this. She goes, these guys get heck happy because they're getting paid because they got insurance. And people have insurance. So I, guys, I'm being real straight and real blunt. I'm not saying that sometimes surgery is not necessary. But guys, you got to make sure it's necessary before you do it. I appreciate you guys, but I want to talk a little bit about health today and making good choices. By the way, I know about all the stuff that's going on in the news today. And quite frankly, it's all a bunch of just circus clown show stuff. Okay. I don't want to talk about Cortez and Trump and his tweets anymore. It's just it's all obfuscation. I mean, I may bring it up every once in a while if it's ridiculous. But guys, I'd rather give you really good information like we did today. I love you guys. I appreciate you. Austin, I'll do the write-up, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Austin, take it up.
Absolutely. Another one, too, another operation that I've probably gotten 50, 60 emails on over the past 10 years that I've been here at Health Masters is gallbladder surgery. Very, very common when where doctors want to remove the gallbladder simply because it's sluggish or it's having issues or it's plugged up. And the issue is people don't understand how important the gallbladder is and bile production is for the digestive system. And I tell people all the time, we put together a very simplistic, very cheap, very easy gallbladder fast. That actually, way back before I was ever here, this has been a tried and true method for decades, and it's with organic, unfiltered apple juice for 3 days. You can look at it on the website at healthmasters.com, gallbladder fast. There's a reason why you have that organ. and the doctors love to tell you. And almost every time I've gotten an email or call on it, they go, yeah, I was having an issue with my gallbladder. My doctor said, oh, you don't need that. Don't worry about it. We're just going to take it out. It's a real, real quick surgery. Don't worry about it. And then they don't tell them that the rest of their life they're going to have digestive issues. They're going to have to stay on all these different pharmaceutical digestive enzymes. They're probably going to have to go on proton pump inhibitors. All these things they don't tell them about, all because their gallbladder was plugged up and they simply needed to clean it out and change their lifestyle as far as dietary intake. So be sure, again, as Dad said, when you start going in there and you start having them tell you, you got to do this right now, you have to do it right now, be very, very questionable about exactly what their motives are when people start telling you you have to have a surgery right now. You always have a choice. You always should get an extra opinion. Also, too, in other health news, there's another article that just came out now published in the Food and Quality Preference revealing that sleep deprivation can also make you crave sugar. A team of researchers from Michigan State University investigated how sleep influences sugar cravings. They studied 51 healthy men who claimed to sleep well. The participants wore electrodes on their scalp so they slept during their usual nighttime routine over two nights. The electrode measured the level of brain activity. Then men went to the laboratory where they were tasted 14 to 18 sugary solutions. They rated those in order of preference. The results showed that the less sleep the participants got, the more they crave sugar. So it's very, very important. That's why I tell people all the time, you have to get adequate sleep. And I know it's very difficult because sometimes I have a very difficult time sleeping enough because I'm always so busy and I'm up and down, up early and back and forth. But do the best you can. A, stay off your phone late at night. Put it up. You don't need it. Shut off your Wi-Fi at night. You don't need that on either. You're sleeping. What in the world do you need Wi-Fi on for? Try to get in bed at a reasonable time if you can do so. I know with kids and everything, that's very difficult. I understand that from experience, especially with my two little munchkins running around. If you need to, use the melatonin sublingual. I use that on a semi-regular basis. I don't use it all the time. Sometimes I only need it. A lot of times I only need about half of a tablet because it's such a strong formula. But try to get adequate rest because the more exhausted you get, your body starts craving those quick carbohydrates so it can use its energy. But the problem is it doesn't really need those. What it needs is sleep. So just something I want to add on there. Also, too, be sure to check out the website at healthmasters.com. We have lots of different specials going on as always, including the Ultimate Multiple Powder Best Buy sale. And of course, check out the product of the week, the Muscle Blast. The last day it's on sale for over 10% off. Be sure to get on the website and vote for the next product you want to see win. It looks like the magnesium malate acid is pulling pretty strong right now. And also, too, I just threw up on the website today the CBD hemp oil six-pack special. Kind of threw something together there. I've had a lot of people request that just in bulk because they're using this product for, you know, therapeutic purposes, and they're using it in high dosages and getting great results from it. So I want to try to give everybody the best price I can with free shipping on a six-pack kit. So that's on the website as well at healthmasters.com. We appreciate you guys. Thank you for the support and the emails. Thank you for forwarding our show and signing up for our free weekly newsletter. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night, a wonderful day tomorrow morning. Have a wonderful night's sleep as well. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow as always.